Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one tasty treat? I know that you are, and I know you know. That means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike. The show is brought to you by the good folks over at Real Salt. Head over to realsalt.com and get the perfect seasoning. Put Dr. Mike in there and get an extra 15% off just because you're a loyal listener. If you like to be in the kitchen, you know how important it is to get the right taste and textures. You know you got to have all the wholesome, authentic, real ingredients. Got to be using the real salt on your food as a seasoning. And speaking of real, we've got the real deal here with us once again. It is Chef Luca Parrish. You know him, you love him. He's the executive chef and owner of Luca's Mediterranean Cafe, the market at Luca's. He's been a restaurateur of the year in New Hampshire, where these are located in Keene, New Hampshire. You've seen him all over the country. He's rocks it from coast to coast, teaching people, you know, how to cook not only correctly, but deliciously. He's dominating in the media. You've seen him conquer on guys' grocery games, destroy the competition, beat them all down with his frying pans. He's my compatriot in the kitchen, my go-to guy. Chef, welcome to the program.
Man, I feel like that's the next level of culinary competitions where you actually have to beat somebody with a culinary pan, with a frying pan, to get to win the competition.
It's Iron Skillet Chefs. You know, two chefs enter, one leaves. You know, whoever you get one cast iron skillet as your shield and weapon.
It's a little Hunger Games to the next level, my friend. Hey,
new meaning to the word Hunger Games. That was good.
I'm waiting for the person who pitches a real life Hunger Games between chefs that they have to almost do stuff to each other. Because at the level it's getting further and further away from actual cooking, some of these shows.
True.
So this is my own little. Yeah. No one wants to even hear this, but that's my little rant. It's getting further and further away, but it's fun. We understand it's entertainment. That's why I did what I did, and it was a good time. But there is you have to remember that all the chefs that are on there actually produce real amazing food. When you see them have to go through any jumping through hoops to make anything, go ahead.
Absolutely right. Oh, I was gonna say you're absolutely right, and folks, you know, should not confuse. Some of these shows that are so far out there, you know, far removed from the one where you won, but that have absolutely nothing to do with sort of real culinary talent. I mean, they border on almost being non-culinary food shows. I mean, you want to talk about, you know, artificial ingredients and, my French, but a few of them have some very artificial personalities, and we'll leave it at that. We won't name names.
Well, that's okay. I guess we won't be getting on Food Network anytime soon.
it's almost the artificial Food Network, you know.
Yeah,
gosh, so little of what the stuff they have to do there. We've got to chide them back into the direction because I know when it first came on and they had the great chefs on there, Mario, Emeril, I actually like Ida Garten very much. I think she's a great chef. They had you on there, those are the people who can really, you know, bring it, and you learn cooking things. And nowadays, as you said, it's mostly entertainment. But we got some real important recipes and some real cooking to share with the folks today. And I'm so glad you sent me this recipe. And I got to tell you why you tickle the cockles of my heart, which is another kind of ingredient that, you know, folks would probably have to use in their cook with cockles. But that's another show. Is we're doing a warm Brussels sprout and hazelnut salad.
Yeah.
And, you know, so often, and particularly I think folks get this influence from those shows, we're focused on the proteins. And so we're not paying attention, and you know, our veg, our sides, you know, that's kind of like an afterthought. But you know, if you want to think about you know, a delicious plate of food, right? It's like a symphony. You know, it might be the grand piano out there, but you need the strings, you need the winds, you know, and it's the same way, I think, for food. You know, the protein may be the star, but a great movie has a fantastic supporting cast. And, you know, sometimes even these, you know, the co-stars sometimes can almost overshine, you know, the stars of the show. And so I really love concentrating on this one, because Brussels sprouts in the fall, you know, where I get them, if you can get to a market, you know, you can still get them on the stalk. It's a sort of an amazing right. thing to see. Right. And the other thing is, hey, let's pay attention to these guys, because these can really elevate a meal no matter what you want to serve this with. So I got to thank you for you know, throwing this one out here, and folks, really pay attention. You know, this isn't a recipe about being a vegan. It's a recipe about elevating your whole game.
Well, and here's the thing, too. I mean, when you talk about sides, the one time of the year, and you know, whenever people listen to the show is whenever, but the one time of the year that I care more about sides than any other time of the year is on Thanksgiving Day. Everybody has a turkey recipe, right? We all have, like, you want to do this. I actually, the thing I care about least is the turkey. For me, it's about the variety of different sides that you can put with this that make the turkey shine. So that if someone overcooked turkey, I don't care. I'm going to have amazing Brussels sprouts. I'm going to have some wonderful butternut squash. I'm going to be using ingredients that just scream fall. You know, I'm going to say, oh, this is what we're doing. And I honestly think that's the best part about days like that. And to me, a lot of times, it's the best part of most dishes. So how do you do that? And something like Brussels sprouts, and the reason why I did this recipe, I get a big kick out of this one, because there are a lot of people that will automatically see Brussels sprouts and say, no way am I going to eat that. There's no
George
way.
George W. Bush.
Like,
George W. Bush, you listen to us.
and Brussels sprouts, you know, they're yucky, they're small. You either eat them overcooked and boiled, or they're roasted too much and they taste burnt. But one of the coolest things I just love the leaves as a salad, and that's what this is. It's breaking down the Brussels sprout a little bit at a time. Every time that the little knot on the bottom, if you cut a piece off, some leaves right. will fall off. You do it again, some more leaves will fall off. You keep going until you basically have gotten to the core of this Brussels sprout, and now you have all these beautiful leaves, and they cook quickly, or if you don't want to even cook them, you could actually just take them the way they are, and we'll talk about how you just pretty much warm them and break them down, and you have this crunch and this one. It's like a little cabbage salad. That's what it really comes down to.
Right, right. I mean, and they are related to cabbage.
They're all the same. So that's something I want to throw you in your court. This cabbage, broccoli, Brussels sprout. There's a big history of that in the Mediterranean, isn't there? Because some people tell me, like, they think broccoli, they think American food, but it's originally from over there, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting if you look at, you know, how many ancient cultures had products and consumed things like this, you know, the cabbage and its relatives, you know, the beets and their relatives. And, you know, you mentioned also some of our other fall, particularly squashes and things like that. Again, all originating in that area, squashes and melons, you know, squashes are Native Americans, but there were varieties that were very important along with melons, like in ancient Egypt, for example. So, yeah, that's one of the things I think hopefully folks will. And if you haven't gotten, folks, head on over to Amazon.com and get your copy of Ancient Eats. That's my latest book. But one of the things that I found in researching, particularly we deal with the Vikings and the Greeks in this volume, but in other cultures as well, is the wide variety of plant foods that they ate compared to what we get now. So you go to the grocery store now, you may not even find fresh, you know, Brussels sprouts, for example,
right.
at any season. And yet you get the same sort of four or five things to pick from, you know, carrots, celery, some lettuce, etc. Where, you know, you go to even today, on Ikaria in Greece, and they'll eat, you know, 150 different, you know, varieties of plants that are native to this one little island throughout the season. So there's wild crafting that goes on, etc. So yeah, you know, folks, one of the things about the way we're built is we're omnivores. We are built, and our guts are built to handle a variety of foods. And I think that's why, you know, so many of us have these wandering palates where we want to taste stuff. And so, you know, if you haven't had Brussels sprouts in a while, or you haven't had them at all since your mom overcooked them when you were a kid, and they had that horrible, stinky cabbage smell that made you want to run out of the house and you know, or go through the drive-thru, you know, pick these up and visit them again. You know, give them another chance. They're so good.
Well, you mentioned the perfect thing that people still do to this day is beets. You know, I mean, we'll get into that another time, but beets are the perfect example of people not wanting to eat those because they've had these, you know, modified canned versions of beets that it just doesn't work. So let's not do that, and let's try fresh beets, and let's get stuff from the farmer's market, and let's do the Brussels sprouts that they're growing, and then you'll see there's a major, major difference. So it's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about this recipe, and it's really simple.
Sure.
It's 12 ounces of fresh Brussels sprouts, 3/4 cups of hazelnuts, shallots that are finely minced. I don't know what I'm saying right now. A tablespoon of honey, and if you have local beekeepers in the area, get local honey, man. You'll see a huge difference in the flavor profile as well. Sherry vinegar. I love sherry wine vinegar for a lot of reasons, but this will be part of that salad. Extra virgin olive oil. 3 ounces of bacon. You get bacon goes into everything, right? You got to love a little bit of that. Or if you have some of that pork belly left over from one of the other shows we've talked about pork a bunch of times, you never know where that could end up also. Now, two things. When I talk about this salad, it's very, very reminiscent of like warm spinach salads. Remember that back in the 80s? It was
Sure.
Every restaurant had a warm spinach pancetta or bacon salad. Right. And that's similar to this because we're using the leaves and cutting them off, we're just using the heat of the fat and the dressing. And we add the Brussels sprouts really quickly. And we're only cooking for a minute, so I'll go through the process. You're going to trim off the bottom of the Brussels sprouts and separate the leaves as they're released each time. And then you're putting the leaves in a bowl, and you continue trimming until you just get the very central core. Then I take thinly slice the central core, and then you chop it up almost like you would do cabbage for a coleslaw. You're shredding that, and you're adding it to the leaves. So it's everything is nice leafy. Well, there you go. Then you take the hazelnuts. You could buy them already pre-crushed, or you could buy them sliced. You could do any version of hazelnuts you want. In the process here, we take a mortar and pestle, or you take a and you roughly chop it, or take a pan and chop it down like that. So you put it in a medium bowl. You're going to add shallots, the honey, the vinegar, the oil, and you put that on the side. Then you can put the bacon in a cast iron or nonstick skillet. Place it over medium-high heat, and you're going to cook, and you're not adding any fat to this. You have enough of the fat that you're going to render out. The bacon itself will create its own little fat. About 4 minutes, you're going to render the fat. Then you're going to, using a spotted spoon, take the bacon out of it and put it into a small bowl. Pour 2 tablespoons of that bacon fat into the bowl with the hazelnuts that you did and whisk and combine. I did not get rid of the fat for the bacon. I'll buy great bacon. Again, if I can buy local, that's going to be local, or I'm going to find a great product. I'm using everything. I don't throw away the fat from the bacon because it's just going to bring me tons of flavor. You season the hazelnut mixture that you've had the bacon fat in there with some salt and pepper. Then that same skillet with whatever remaining bacon fat you have in there, turn it on to high heat until lightly smoking. Add the Brussels sprout, spread in an even layer, season with salt and pepper, and cook it without moving for about a minute. They start almost popping, you know, that fresh pop because it's excreting some of the liquid. And then stir, finish cooking, shake it till the leaves are bright green, just starting to turn tender. Another minute, basically. It's 2 minutes of cooking time, barely anything. Transfer to the bowl, add the fresh bacon and the dressing, toss and serve. It is incredible. You don't have to boil them for 20 minutes. in their whole state. You don't have to roast them for 20 minutes or a half hour or whatever most people take to cook Brussels sprouts. It takes literally minutes to make an amazing warm Brussels sprout salad that'll go with any dish you put together.
And I love this too. I love the little bit of sweet, you know, from the honey.
Yeah, the honey.
And,
yeah.
You know, and for folks, you mentioned, you know, getting the local honey, and they're sort of, again, forgive the pun, but we got to do at least one a show, right? But there's been a bit of a buzz about, you know, the health benefits of consuming consuming.
You're good at,
you know,
this, man. You're
honey.
Really good at this.
Yeah, you know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut, right? So, you know, it's got that sweetness, and then you got that the sort of the zing from the sherry vinegar.
Yep.
So I really love that acidity and that little bit of sweetness, and I think that would just works really, really well with the natural flavors of the Brussels sprout. You know, when I do a coleslaw, I put a little bit of honey in there, and we always put,
yep,
right, some kind of vinegar in there. So you're getting sort of that same flavor profile, but distinctly different flavors, if that sort of makes any sense.
And I think it's important to know when, you know, we've talked about this numerous times, and I've learned this from you about, you know, when people say to watch certain things, when you just add some type of refined sugar to something to make it sweet, well, you're making it sweet, but are you making it better? Is it a better product? So then,
great,
when you
great,
look at it, at an additive or something that you want to add to a dish to sweeten it, well, then look at the various ways you could sweeten something without just using some type of processed product, like, you know, refined, you know, white sugar. So now, do you look at, you know, is there a special cane sugar, or is there honey, or the what? And then you look at what's accessible, and what's first start with what's local. What can I do locally that are, it's easy to find and I can get all times of year? Well, I pick up a jar or two of honey a year, and I'm not using it a ton unless I put it in tea or anything, but I just use it in certain dishes that I want to get sweetness out of, and then you have this kind of backdrop. You know what else works well here? It'll play off well just because I'm in New England and we're in the fall, is you substitute maple syrup in there. You're going to give it a different,
sure,
flavor profile. It'll be a little more intense in the maple aspect, but it's still an option when you do local maple syrup. Now you've sweetened and you've used a product that is sustainable locally, plus better for you. Start with that. If you have to get to the point where you're on a deserted island, actually, if you're on a deserted island, there's no supermarket there that you're going to get fast food from, but that's even better. You're going to find really great things in there, you know? But let's say you're in an area.
Wilson will be with your sous chef, Wilson, right?
I like that. That's a great comment. Was the movie Castaway?
Castaway. Castaway with Tom Hanks.
That's a Castaway.
Tom Hanks.
So you have a way to look at this recipe and say, where am I going to get these items? And don't look at the recipe and say, I have to buy hazelnuts, or I have to buy shallots, or I have to have honey. Look at this recipe and say, okay, where is my Brussels sprout flavor for? I'll buy the Brussels sprouts, but where are my nuts going to come from? So maybe I don't have hazelnuts. Maybe I want to do walnuts. Maybe I want to do something else. You know,
right,
if I'm not using a shallot and someone is growing local onions, well, use a local onion. Use chives. Use, you know, some other scallions, especially if you could get a good product. And then when you look at your sweetness, think, is it going to be the honey? Is it going to be something else that I could do? And then your acid is important. That balance of the sweet and the acid to the fat that comes out of the bacon to,
right,
to the vegetable, it's a composed vegetable. It's not just I'm boiling vegetables for the sake of having vegetable on my plate. And that's the other thing, too. I didn't blanch out any of the good stuff in this ahead of time. Everything was cooked and utilized together, and I think that's what I see a lot of, is like people go, well, I have to blanch out my broccoli, then I strain it, and then, you know, what you know, I've always thought, what about all the stuff that you just threw away that just came out of there? I mean, some chlorophyll, yeah, but what about all the other nutrients that probably left there because you were blanching it so long? Everything stays in this. The good parts are here.
Yeah, and you are exactly right. You hit on something really important. People may not realize that one of the biggest fake food sort of exposés was actually honey. So a lot of times, you know, when you're buying local, and you know the beekeepers, and you know, and, sure. and they got the apiaries, etc. You know what you're getting. You're getting real honey, local, with all the additional nutritional benefits and flavor complexities that come with real honey. And what is real honey? And you know, I've talked about this and the importance of this. It's a living food. It's a real food. You know, the ones that have been stabilized for the ability to stay on the shelf for a long time, you know, pasteurized, a lot of that is dead food. And quite frankly, you don't know if you're getting a little bit of honey flavor and a whole lot of, you know, high fructose corn syrup, you know, because people can't sort of taste those out. So absolutely, you know, one of the important reasons is the flavor and the flavor profiles, like you said. Another is so that we know what we're eating. You know, a lot of times we just don't know. And most people are surprised to find out that one of the biggest exposés, you know, one of the biggest finds, et cetera, was actually for fraudulent honey.
Yes. It's kind of scary. And then when you think, again, it goes back to, we've talked about this with finding products that you could tell the difference, maple syrup, honey. When you taste the real thing, you will notice right away just how incredible
right.
and how flavorful it can be. And especially if you spent your whole life, and I got to tell you, I have. I didn't have real honey until I moved up to Keene, New Hampshire from New York, and I didn't have real maple syrup until I moved up here. And it was eye-opening. It was an incredible moment in time where I said, this is what, I mean, this you felt like you were ingesting some or taking something that was amazing. Before it was just a sweetener, and now it's something
right.
incredible. I'll never look at pancakes the same way again.
Oh, right. I mean, if people think, oh, well, I put maple syrup on it. No, if you're not getting maple syrup and you're using pancake syrup, you're just ingesting, you know, basically straight high fructose corn syrup with a little bit of usual artificial flavor. So yeah, I just thought that was a great point. You know, sometimes folks, you know, they make all the effort to go out to the farmer's market, get, you know, the Brussels sprouts growing on the stalk, you know, shop for this or that. And then they're using, you know, an absolutely horrible, you know, processed dead honey. And so, you know, the theme is, you know, you want to be alive, you want to feel vibrant, you want to feel good. You got to eat food that does the same. And again, I just love this recipe because it really makes the one who's usually an afterthought or, you know, a supporting, you know, member of the cast. This is a great recipe to let them shine. And you know, like you said, if it's the time of year and you got some beets, you could throw some beet greens on here. You know,
sure.
Possibilities, I think, are endless.
Any greens. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing you could do is now take this recipe. That's the other thing we were talking about is substituting. Any type of good hearty green will go wonderful with this. We just jumped into honey. It's kind of weird because I about 3 or 4 years ago, I got my first experience beekeeping because we have a lot of local beekeepers, and I actually did a TV show wrapped around it, and we first started at her hives, and we went in there, and I don't like bees, man. They have bees fly around me. I freak out a little bit. My kids freak out. But if you want to, again, you want to see the whole process of something as amazing as what these bees do to create all this honey that we're enjoying, it's miraculous, and it changes your perspective on these bees. You know, you don't want to swat them, you just want to leave them alone, let them do their job so they can continue giving us this beautiful stuff. So, and I don't know the difference between good honey making bees and the ones that will hurt you and nothing else, so I don't touch any of them anymore. I've actually become like a bee pacifist. I used to be so bad. Anyway, but
hey,
with the experience,
hey, Luca, chef, just be gentle.
Oh, nice.
And be kind.
You have me bewildered, my friend, with all this stuff. Yeah. Anyway, so, but if it's an experience, if you have the opportunity, like we have a local lady who does bee classes and hive classes and everything, and if you have the opportunity just to take that and open your eyes to what's around you. I mean, I have a mushroom forager in the area who does mitochondria classes, and he takes you through the forest and he talks about mushrooms. We have a beekeeper in the area who does bee classes. You could go to any of the local farms and they'll spend hours with you talking about what they do, how they grow their animals, and what have you. We don't have that opportunity a lot. Most of us don't have that opportunity to be part of that. But so if you took an afternoon, took your children, or took yourself and got to see that, what you're now exposing yourself is to, I get it. Now I know why I should eat this way and why I should spend this money, because I should put my money here with so-and-so who has the bees, and if I buy a jar off of her and I use that up in 6 months and buy another jar, she's now created something, but I'm eating something great, and I got to see where they came from. It's so awesome.
It really is. And again, folks, I send you over to cardiochef.com to get the newsletter. I talk a little bit there. Amazon.com, Ancient Eats. You know, one thing I just wanted to close with, kind of give us a perspective, is that for so much of the history of mankind, we only had these natural sweeteners like honey, you know, and we used it, you know, in all these different confections that were made throughout the course of mankind, you know, all across the globe, made it into mead to celebrate and honor, you know, the meal and the whole food experience. So I just want to thank you again from the bottom of my heart for bringing Brussels sprouts, you know, to the forefront and giving them, you know, their due course and giving them a good break. So, folks, head on over to Chef Luca, lucaparis.com. Check out what Chef's up to. Make sure to go to Cardio Chef. Get that newsletter. You're going to get all these great recipes. You're going to get a whole lot more information. Sign up for it over there. And until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.